Blog Talk Radio.
Are you there with me?
I'm here, but I don't think I'm unmuted.
You are now. I can hear you.
Oh, well, very good then. Then the answer to that would be yes. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to your other weekly, not to be confused with otherworldly, other weekly a program exploring ekphrasis with Captain B2 and the incomparable D2, Gan Deschino, who says he's already
yes.
here. So I don't
I
have
am,
to take
I
a
I am already here.
No, yes.
No, not at all. You don't have to. I am here.
Here you are.
Here I am.
Yes, great, great. How was your week?
Yeah, it was good. It was was it good? Yeah, it was good. I'm still here, so that's a good thing. It was very, 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 very busy. I was like 12-hour days of work and all that, so I took a nice nap today and relaxed a little. So, but got very excited for the show. So I'm very excited tonight. And that song was I played this artist before. The original song was by a piano player from Philadelphia area in the United States called Kat Supanetsky. And I can post her website, but it's just Katrina Supanetsky if you look that up. She's a piano player. She's great. It's called Almost Spring. And so I actually was just texting her a few minutes ago. She just played a solo concert in Philadelphia today that I guess went really well.
Hello.
It was very gracious that she let us use her song tonight. So she might even be listening tonight. I'm not sure because I did tell her that we were going to, you know, she knows we're playing it now. So, Kat, if you're out there, I'm a big fan. I'm a fan of yours, as you know, and I appreciate your friendship and collaboration.
And
let us use your song.
And I'll the link that you provided me earlier today for that particular piece, I will make sure that I post on the chat board. So should anyone fancy it enough to want to go out and seek out more like it, they'll have that information. So
well,
that'd be
great.
Have it
yeah, sure.
Last night when I was assembling all the information.
Yeah, that'd be great. She had that, her link to everything is there. She's got, you know, songs and stuff all over the place to buy. I was a fan first, and I ended up actually befriending her a little bit and collaborating with her, which was great. But if you're a fan of, like, George Winston, Liz Story, if you know who they are, Kat is just like that style and really great. But anyway, we are here tonight me and Bobby, and I think we have people on the board as well, too. I don't know if anyone else has called in. Please interrupt me if you're on the phone. But I know we have on the board, we have Stelina, we have Jenny Hunt, we have Naomi, we have Gray behind the scenes, and all these people hanging out.
Yeah. And thank you, Gray. Thank you, Gray, for being our technical assistant. Do appreciate that very, very much.
Gray's the man.
Yeah, the only thing better than having Gray on the boards is having Gray on the phone.
Exactly. But we should probably get started. Knowing us, we'll have 45 carryovers if we don't get going here. So
I do want to say thank you. Everyone rallied at the last minute, and we got some. We seem to have an audience that likes to worry us and then just come in with a last minute surge of work, which I'm okay with personally.
It's all about the drama. You know what I mean? That's what it is. It's
which is why I don't date women. Too much drama.
There you go. That's right. Well,
that's fact. I don't care for it. You know, I've been queer for guys for years myself, but that's another conversation.
That's right. All right, well, we're going to get cranking here.
Unusual, strange start. That's okay.
Ladies first, of course, Captain. So if you want to get us going with Weaver's poem from last, this is some carryover from last
of
time.
Of course.
I will do my best. One more on the board. We have Miriam in the board, too. So just like last week, we got a party on the board tonight.
Woo-hoo. Everybody in the cheap seats. Yeah. They're the ones that sit in the balcony and like to throw popcorn down on the people below.
That's right.
I will do my very best to channel Weaver. I don't know if I can do justice to her Scottish accent, but I'll do my very best. So, and her piece is called An Orange. What do I do now, forsooth? This Dumkopf appeals not. He may be one of the family, the gear, but he has no style. It is his pensive companion whose demeanor intrigues. He does not look upon me, but will listen and observe. The gear's hand holds on to mine. 'Tis clammy and cold as a fish. To escape it, I pick up an orange, prefer it to advert his attentions. Finally, they both take their leave. De Geer's silent companion bows, whispers as he squeezes my hand, look for me tomorrow, be alone. End poem.
Excellent. Combination of Scottish and German accents all there together.
That was easy, let me tell you.
Yeah. And I think we might have somebody else joined. Is somebody else here?
Door. Hello. Right. Hello. It's me, Naomi.
Oh, wonderful. Welcome.
Hi, Bobby. Hi, Daniel.
Hey,
Hi,
Naomi.
Gray.
So great you could join. Yeah, Gray's in the background. He's hanging out there. But, yeah, hey, Naomi, so glad you could join. Late to the party, or your punishment is you get to comment first if you got to hear that or read that.
Yeah, I did. You know, I really like this, you know, how it's you've written right to that prompt. So well written. She even put in the orange in there. And I just love De Geer's hand holds on to mine. 'Tis clammy and cold as a fish. To escape it, I pick up an orange, prefer it to avert his attention. And, you know, I was just thinking, look for me tomorrow, be alone. You know, after that stands, I don't think she will be alone. And I don't think she'll be there tomorrow. But, you know, neat, awesome write here by Kate. As usual, she tells a great, great story. Oh, sure. It always has a little bit of humor in it, too.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, yes, Stelina says, great piece as well, witty and engaging from Stelina. Thank you. Yeah, I liked it, too. I really when I commented on it, it was the orange that got me as well, too, that she actually – I love that that's the focus there on that. And, you know, we talked before about this artist that has a lot of the window, and it is probably interesting or is, there was a reason, I'm sure, that he put the orange next to the window. And I just thought it was great to just – it was a very unique take and a beautiful and fun take on the prompt. I just love the what do I do now for sooth this dumb cuff appeals not. He may be one of the family, but Didieri, but he has no style. That was a lot of fun. You can just see these people just you know, sitting around gossiping like that and just kind of having fun. So I thought that was great. And Bobby, you got to read it.
I like Weaver's brevity. She is able to weave a nice, a compact story into them, and the inspiration for this prompt is something that I would not have seen here, but it's wonderful that she's lent such a personality to this piece, which otherwise you would have looked at it casually and not seen the interaction going on Sabrosa and her preferring the orange. I don't think she'll need the oranges tomorrow. So
yep.
I enjoyed it thoroughly.
Excellent. Yeah, we have Sills on the
board.
Hey,
can you guys
hear me? Okay, I just got, I don't know what happened. I got disconnected for a second there. Interesting. So it looks like we have, so Phil's on the board and someone else joined too. I'm trying to see who else joined here. So, oh, Amy joined as well too. So I can't keep track anymore. We have so many people on the board. It is getting crazy there. So everybody, thank you for joining. And we have our next poem here. I'm going to post it right now, I promise. Yeah, I do. I have lots of ladies. I know. I got well, this is my lucky night. I got all these beautiful women here with me tonight. And my lucky night, let me tell you. All right, I'm going to read this one by W.P. McLeod, one, called The Polymaths. Every day the world happens. The moon yo-yos from morning to night, dropping rose petals on the heads of statues, staring marble-eyed in vacant parks and guarding the bronze doors of municipal libraries, stacked with leather-bound bookcases holding the gamut of human wisdom between the clenched teeth of steel bookends. Sightless cameras lurk in corners, ready to shed the paper into electronic bits and vacuum the feathers of written knowledge into the spread-out wings of the great gallery where old men in wired pairs of bottle-thick glasses read tablet screens like Sumerian hieroglyphics baked into slabs of clay. Their finger swipes turn pages at a touch as red eyes water and bleed down wrinkled cheeks, puddling each tablet's glassy face mirrored in the blur of the pendant's errant eyesight. By dusk, the daily dust has settled on the tabletops and books. Paper lampshades glow yellow in the shade of the late hour as the scholars grow impatient, fading in the waning light. All day they waited in the world and nothing happens. End poem. And this is on the prompt for the astronomer and the geographer. Bobby, I'm going to start with you again.
Why? I don't mind. I was actually looking up the prompt, and I think had I written to something other, I would have written to these two prompts because their similarity. They do tend to parallel each other and suggest not only different similar activities, but similar mindsets as well. And I like the fact that refers to them as the polymaths, which is not a terminology that many people are acquainted with. But a polymath is someone who is quite well acquainted with, they're conversant on a number of subjects and are well, they're knowledgeable in a number of subjects. Whoops, I just lost my tab. I did notice that the two there together do have a kinship to suggest that here are two individuals who are driven by the same quest for knowledge, and whereas one is an astronomer, the other is a geographer. So one is bound by Earth, and one is looks at the stars. Although I think it's interesting that the figure, the drawing of the astronomer has the globe in it, and I'm looking at it and I see what looks like constellations on the globe, but in the geographer there is no globe. Oh no, there it is up on the top on the shelf. He's got it up in the way on the shelf and a map on the wall. But I thought that was interesting, and he's got his compass there, tracking his distances. But very similar in its composition. So it would especially with the tapestries and the drapings and the chair and everything, except the chair is to the wall. And one is sitting and one is standing. I like this. I like the subtle differences, and I like how the poet addresses them. And sightless cameras lurk in corners, ready to shred the paper into electronic bits and vacuum the feathers of written knowledge into the spread-out wings of the great gallery where old men in wired pairs of bottle-thick glasses read tablet screens like Sumerian hieroglyphics. Interesting. I like it's very descriptive piece. I like the way he's brought so much detail forward and given it such personality.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Bobby. And Miriam says, feathers of written knowledge. She likes that line, which I agree with. How about you, Naomi? What do you think?
My gracious, this piece is so full with, you know, amazing, amazing wording, amazing imagery. And, you know, I don't know where to start. I don't know which to, you know, right from the beginning, the moon yo-yos from morning to night, dropping rose petals on the head of the statue. You know, that is just wow. You know, you open up with that bang and then you continue on. But you know what really struck me is the last line, all day they waited in the world and nothing happened. So all day they were there, their heads stuck in books. And, you know, the world went on and to them nothing happened because, you know, they were so engrossed in what they were reading, and I guess
yeah.
You know that in their, you know, they're wanting to get all this knowledge, you know, jammed into their heads and brains, that, you know, life goes on without them. Kind of, I got kind of that feeling out of the whole piece there.
Or goes on around them.
Yeah, and so. It's a wonderful, wonderful write.
It is, and I find that very true. A very scholarly people who tend to, they're not part of the world. I should say they're in it, but they're not of it. And you see that readily when you get tend to be around those enclaves of people. I worked at NIST for a year. And NIST, for those unfamiliar with the acronym, is the National Institute of standards and technology, which once upon a time in my youth used to be called the Bureau of Standards, and basically much of the standardization of units of measure and things of that nature go on there. And you've got probably the largest collection of doctorates and Nobel Prize winners in one spot on the universe at these people. And to look at them in the lunchroom, you're kind of like, oh, you got dressed in the closet in the dark again, didn't you? Because they have very little regard for their appearance. They don't care. It's not a primary concern. And I've had a friend who was a part of Bell Labs, and they said with the scientists at Bell Labs, each of the scientists was assigned a keeper, who made sure that particular scientist ate, slept, and took care of daily functions that otherwise would break down the human body. And it's strange mm-hmm. Some people get so consumed in their passion that the world goes away.
Yeah. When I went to university, we'd go to, you know, we were so absorbed in studying and everything that, you know, well, me among others would just go to class in our pajamas. And, you know, oh, yeah, it happened often. And, you know, and we didn't give a heck to dressing up or anything. I mean, we're so in our studies and so involved that, you know, there's everything else.
That can get a little problematic if you sleep in the nude.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yep, moving on. Amy had said the Shield of the Last Two Lenses really captures that timeless scene of the scholar framed in the sunlight, which is, I think, is what you ladies are saying. And I also like the first and the last line I thought was great. Every day the world happens, you were saying this, Naomi. And the last one, all the day they waited in the world and nothing happened. That was really interesting that they were reading all these things, and the poem is sandwiched in between those two lines. I thought was great. But yes. Life moves on, and we move on to the great and all-powerful Pam. We have a SoundCloud from her, and I just posted her poem, and that's what's next. We have a SoundCloud from her, I believe. This is her version of 4 minutes and 22 seconds of silence by John Cage.
She kneels in the dirt by the cathedral stairs beneath an indigo sky, blessing the water, adding the fragrant oil mixed with aloe, frankincense, and myrrh that will cleanse the bodies of the fallen martyrs who have died bloody and violent deaths in the name of faith. She is peaches and cream that bring forth a lion's growl of hunger, and golden tones of summer sand tumble from her hair. She tries so hard to be pious, but she cannot help but feel a flush of lust and pride, knowing that when she leans forward towards the pitcher and the dust, he is watching and admiring the exposed curve of her milky collarbone. She is captivated by his stoic silence. Animal instinct burns within his focused eyes. He gently lifts the colors from his palette. He is capturing every minute detail of their surroundings, including the ancient building and jealous woman hanging in the background, waiting her turn to be favored by the artist with the vision of a god. He has the power to bring the dead to life within the dance of a brush, across a canvas that moans his name. Art changes the course of history. Praxedis, beloved and beautiful, once she was humble, but humility can no longer exist when a woman has tasted her own provocative power in the act of making love without a touch to flesh, only glances exchanged between layers of paint, revealing a new identity, awakened self grasping the root of burning depths of pleasure, holy oil drips slick upon her trembling sighs, offered to the artist. End poem.
Awesome read. Thank you very much. And we actually have two more people on this board. I'm never going to be able to keep up. We have Dexter and Robbie's Poetry. So all kinds of people on the board there. And I like this. I got to read this earlier. And, you know, there's so much to talk about on here, so we'll definitely get to your comments. But I love the use of frankincense and myrrh. When you do that, what happened to frankincense and myrrh? Go to CVS and ask for a bottle of myrrh. See what happens with that one. But let's start off with Naomi. Naomi, what do you think?
Oh, yeah, I really like this. You know, the Pam writes so beautifully. And, you know, I'm so happy that she started to do SoundClouds. Woo-hoo! It's great to hear her voice, you know, reading her own poems because, you know, she does it so well. And she writes in such a peculiar way, her own way, with great metaphors and awesome imagery as well. And, you know, this is such a powerful poem. You know, he has the power to bring the dead to life within the dance of a brush across a canvas that moans his name. Art changes the course of history. Praxidus, beloved, beautiful, once she was humble. You know, she really, really gets in. She really gets into character here, and she creates this character in the picture from A to Z. My gracious, with all her greatness, her goodness, and her flaws and everything, and just brings it forth for us to really, you know, get to know this woman here, the way that Pam, the poet, she sees her. And, you know, this is a great, great piece all the way through. Wonderfully, wonderfully written, Pam, and beautifully, beautifully done.
Yeah, I agree. I was really excited about her with her. I really like it when Pam does the characters, like you said. You know, and she got deep into it, like the line, across a canvas that moans his name, was just a great line there. Absolutely. Absolutely. And Robbie said he got 20-ish centimeters of snow, big storm last night. So, yeah, winter is still, even though spring is coming, winter is still there. So glad you're okay, Robbie. So, Bobby. What do you think?
I agree. Pam's rendering of her own poetry lends so much more to it because her emotions are invested in what she's reading, and you get a sense of where it has impressed, where the work has impressed her, the artwork. And I thought this was a very interesting, my cat liked it too. I'm sorry. Another country has heard from. I'm sorry, folks, he's feeling very needy here the last few weeks because his mate, or I should say his sister is gone. And so he's always around me, letting me know that he's there. So anyway, I like the fact that she's taken this a religious figure out of most of all of the prompts were not, and really given its personality and personified and given it background in a great deal of detail.
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely. It was it was fantastic. All right, cool. Let's move on here. We got a couple more, and then we can get to the new show. So I am behind, so hold on a second here. It's coming, people, I promise. All right, this one, it all kinds of wrong buttons there. Hold on a second. All right, there we go. So this one is by Keith Palethorpe, and if you can read that, Naomi, that would be fantastic.
Okay. So this is Man and Maid. This is a study in perspective and inference. The looming figure of the officer is barely more than a silhouette. He will tell us nothing but his rank and serial number. But the girl, off-center and foreshortened, is rife with detail. She will break under cross-examination. Her hands on the table betray a modest, maddeningly anticipation. Her face is a map of budding admiration and regard. The map above them is mostly no man's land. The lack of food or drink suggests a chance and brief encounter. This inscribed moment is known world, the rest no man's land, and the master of it all is chance. End poem.
Awesome read. I appreciate that. And I loved how they were comparing the encounter to the map on the wall. I thought was fantastic. So you have the map, her face is a map of budding admiration and regard, and the map above is mostly no man's land. And I didn't notice this till we read it, that yes, there's no food, there's nothing really on the table, so maybe this was a chance encounter. So really reading so much detail into the picture to make this poem, but that kind of back and forth of not exploring the world, but kind of exploring each other that the people are doing, I thought was fantastic. So that was a lot of fun. That was a great, great poem, Keith. And Bobby, what are your thoughts?
I was intrigued also by the examination of the details in the poem. And he says right up, right, this is a study in perspective and inference. And you can see that, you know, there's certain things to be derived from just what you see and what you don't see. And I also was reminded of what I had written on this in last week about their anonymous immortality. There's two figures that are just part of another tableau by Vermeer. We don't know who these people are. We don't know why they've met, yet they sit next to the window, and they are now part of history.
Absolutely, yeah. It's very, very interesting. Cool, so let's move on. We have one more, and it's actually by me. So last and certainly least, I will play mine. Bobby and I, we don't usually write for the... one of those... and I think we get somebody else on the board first. I'm going to interrupt myself. Who else just joined? Hello? Somebody else there?
Dex.
Hey, Dex. Thanks for joining.
Hey.
We got
yeah, not a problem.
I'm going to interrupt myself.
Doorbell or what? What was that?
That was the doorbell, I guess, saying that you're coming in.
Oh,
I don't know. New feature? I'm not sure. And I'm going to interrupt myself again because actually I didn't get your comments, Naomi. I'm already missing people here. Man, I am tired today. So Naomi, you got to read it and you didn't get to comment on it yet. So go ahead, please.
Oh well, that was okay. Yeah, well, I like your remark, Daniel. About the map there, and the map, which is a thing that we study, and it's fun that his first line was, "This is a study in perspective and inference." And then he does refer to that map throughout the poem. And as a map are these two figures, there for us to study as we study a map. And I like how he says, the looming figure of the officer is barely more than a silhouette. He will tell us nothing but his rank and serial number. But the girl, you know, and then the girl, we really see her in the sunlight, you know, coming in from the window. She really see her expression. She's in the foreshort handed, you know, rifled with detail, as he says. So a very well descriptive write and a wonderful, you know, descriptive piece of the prompt. So very well done.
Absolutely. And Duke, for joining here, did you get to read it or listen to it?
Yeah, I thought it was a fantastic write. I thought he really nailed that photograph. You know, I liked the way that he described, you know, obviously she's kind of like the map, but I kind of like the way that they described him. It's almost as if he doesn't need to have much personality or anything along those lines. You know, when he shows his rank and things like that, he kind of gets his way. So very well done. I thought it was a great write.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, cool. All right, now I will post mine and give it a read, and then we'll get on to the new contest. All right, this one is called The Geographer. Oh, the human mind, from sparks once lit, does desire never end? From the science of what is, through the enlightenment of thought, to the beauty and romance of it all, right in the middle stands a lone geographer who is warmed by photons, enchanted by the light, and whose heart is captured by the vision of what is beyond the horizon. How desperately he needs to know what worlds wait upon the world where he stands. He craves not books, he seeks out not tales, for each map collected, each globe of clues, each tapestry of cartographic wonders brings infinite stories undiscovered. To connect clues with quill and ink to him is blood flowing from a beating heart. To discover the island from a long-lost map, he thinks a message from God on a just-deciphered Bible verse. But it is the window of enlightenment, the spark, the light, and the love that powers his imagination. End poem. Yeah, I remember writing this, and I just thought it was interesting, him looking out the window with all the maps and everything, and I thought that's probably where his vision, you know, his imagination, his love goes to, is imagining what's out there. So it was a fun write. We should write more for this, Bobby. I think it's interesting to write for the contests. But what do you think? Anyway, Bobby, let's start with you.
Actually, I was looking after reading yours. I was looking back at the one I had written, and I had a very satisfying write. I saw a lot more in it than I expected to see, and the comments were quite flattering. That people enjoyed my perspective on the fact that the window from the left and the light. I like who warms by photons enchanted by the light, and whose heart is captured by the vision of what is beyond the horizon, how desperately he needs to know what worlds wait upon the world where he stands. I enjoyed that particular passage. Each map collected, each globe of clues, every tapestry of cartographic wonders brings infinite stories undiscovered. And it's that constant desire that drive to know, and I like the way you put that, and with a romance to it that a lot of people don't realize. Scholars do feel passionate; they feel passion about their pursuit. Lest why should they do it? I mean, they some people think that the scholars are these dry parcels of humanity that simply seek knowledge for knowledge's sake, and when in fact that quest is fired by an eternal spark, a desire, a need to know.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Whenever I think of scholars, just a quick story. So there was a there's Harvard Radio Telescope by my house, which is not in not at Harvard University. It's in Harvard, Mass. And they put up a radio telescope. I belong to this thing called the Planetary Society, which I was lucky and I got invited as a member of that. I got invited to literally turn on or to be part of, excuse me, of the turning on of this radio telescope to look for life in outer space. And Carl Sagan was supposed to be there. He wasn't even sick at the time. But anyway, it wasn't a lot of people there. The thing I just remember was all these Harvard and MIT scientists there, and they looked like little kids because they all like brought bag lunches, and they're all sitting around this picnic table like eating like peanut butter sandwiches and apples. And I just thought it was the funniest thing of these, you know, these scientists that were all like little kids at this playground to them, kind of turning on this telescope and eating their little bag lunches. So. Yeah, it's that is interesting. Anyway, it's a side story. Sorry, Naomi, what do you what did you think? And thank you, brother.
Yeah. You know, Daniel. Wow. You know, I really like this. You know, you really, really personified this character here. You know, I just love the lines to connect clues with quill and ink. To him, is blood flowing from a beating heart. To discover the island from a long-lost map. He thinks a message from God on a just-deciphered Bible verse. Wow, that is such a great line. You know, that last one, discover an island is like, you know, deciphering a Bible verse. That's so intelligently, uniquely worded there. And, you know, it shows the character's such great passionate side for, you know, discovery and you know, his character, his soul, you know, that just wants to eat up everything and, you know, go on these voyages and you know, discover new lands and new worlds. And so, yeah, I think you really, really brought that out in this right. So wonderful, wonderful. Wonderfully written.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And for the comments from Robbie and Stelina as well, too. And somebody just posted Shinzomnia, new to the group, and just joined again. So say hi. Man, we cannot stop people. This is a serious party over here. And Dex, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought it was a great write, you know, and just the difficulty of having that job has crossed, you know, my mind from the original, you know, people that were mapping these things out. You know, it's weird to think about what am I actually even standing on now, as dumb as that seems. It's just, when you're going to try and map it from the top view, it would be a whole lot harder than what it seems. And I think that a lot of these different that you say that he kind of goes, wants to go past the stories, but, you know, it would be, you know, these are where these people are, and they had this war, or this is where the octopus sunk the ship. I mean, there's always these kind of different stories that kind of went along with, I think, geography and people that were there. And so he's not really concerned about with that. He wants to get the map. So very well done.
Thanks, Dex. I appreciate it. And that, Bobby, brings us to our new contest.
I got to work on my fanfare.
Yeah.
Well, our current contest, and we say, as we say, a fond farewell to Mr. Vermeer and his wonderful work. Our current contest is the interpretive portraits of Madame Svetlana Melik-Nuborova. And which sounds Russian, except she's Turkish. She's an award-winning Turkish artist. She's a photographer, born in Kazakhstan, studied music, painting from an early age. She is also a child psychologist. How about that? So many of the portraits of the children that she takes, the portraits that she makes, she renders, are children that she treats professionally. So she's always had a passion for painting and approaches her work, her photograph, because mind you, these are photographs. They're very stylized. Her renderings of beauty and femininity and fragility, she's got a whole, matter of fact, she's got a whole body of work that was so extensive that and featured mostly female subjects, and knowing that a Faziana likes to call upon artists who specialize in female subjects and interpretation, I tried to give more of an eclectic mix and stayed away from many of the female subjects in her body of work to leave them free for a possible contest for a Faziana. So I covered a more of an eclectic mix of what she had out there. And she stages her subjects in what she calls the inexpressible fragility of being. And she tries to make them harmonious with their surroundings. Like I said, very stylized, they look like portraits. I mean, this is all photography, sometimes a fairy tale like quality of it, very surreal, and with a fascinating, I think, a depth of what you can see in the renderings. She's got many awards, has had many solo exhibitions, and I left a whole raft of I try and include resources at the end of each of the write-ups. Should someone really fancy an artist, they can go explore them. And so that's why I could include all of this information at the end. So I, like I said, I tried to include a fair cross section. There's some black and whites, male and female, children, some interesting portraits, some very, very surreal, some with animals, some almost humorous. And with that, I put them out to you folks, and let's see what we got back.
Absolutely. Let's do it. And we have Frank on the board as well, too. So I'm running out of fingers. I can't count this many people anymore that's on the board. So I appreciate everybody being on there. And I'm going to continue with you, because I'm going to continue with our tradition of you reading Amy's poems.
Okay.
And I'm going to put this on the board here. I think we have to continue with that.
I like that.
So
I don't mind.
It's coming.
It's not even ready. I'm sorry, I couldn't
hold on. I hit send, and it's – oh, there we go. Okay, it finally went. So there you go. There's our poem.
Okay, let me refresh. Or as my one says, we flesh. Okay, and there it is. And here we have Reflections of Intent by A.R. Mundell, as we know as Amy. The Mogi could not tell her the vast danger that knife or that a fleeting tyrant's death less precious than her own. It hoped its eyes conveyed it, and its voice translated truth, and not that it just wanted food or to be let out on the roof. And yet, the only sight she saw was the glint within the blade, that blade, reflections of a distant death, the blood where she once laid. She stared into its endless depth, the choices she could make, losing the sight of all they had, the tolls which each might take. So even if the cat could talk, it knew she'd take no heed, lost within the obsession's grip, the sweetness of that deed. Its calls fell on a hazy brain beyond the plains of there, crossed into that further place where she imagines fair. a land where payback never lies and greed can never win, and where righteous walks with fortune and the wretched are racked with sin. Thought, though of the realms the cat can see, no plane like that exists in every kingdom. Power rules and takes and gets and twists. But humans are a simple race. They cannot pierce that veil. Their ears cannot parse such basic words, nor eyes the twitch of tails. And so, resigned, it plays the fool and steps upon the glint, butting at her knuckles until she gets the hint. End of poem.
Excellent read, as always. That was beautiful. Dex, start with you.
Yeah, this is a very interesting tale. She stares into an endless depth, the choices she could make, losing sight of all they had, the tolls which each might take. I feel like this, you know, is a murder scene that just kind of happened. And that possibly she's going to try and now figure out what to do, you know, what the cover up or something along these lines. And maybe it's best to play the fool, like if you're questions of it, if you're questioned by it. I could be wrong on my interpretation of it. I thought it was a great poem. And it would take a couple of reads to fully get it, but I thought that there was a lot of depth to this, right?
Well, I agree, and you know, its calls fell on a hazy brain beyond the plains of there. I think I'm getting the same thing that you were getting, but just with that line, even a great comment. Thanks, Dex. Naomi, your turn.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, if you take the title Reflections of Intent, I think the girl is obsessing about all this. You know, she's thinking of murder and self-destruction, maybe suicide, or, you know, and I think it's a social commentary on, you know, how the humankind can be obsessive and self-destructive. And whereas an animal, they just, you know, act by instinct. And, you know, like the basic twitch of the tails and, you know, just fasting for food and just getting to get what they want. So the comparison, the juxtaposition of the cat with the human, the girl there, it really brings out each side very, very strongly. And, you know, this is a very powerful write and very well written. The rhyme and meter is perfect. So bravo, Amy. I really like this one.
Yeah, absolutely. And Bobby, I'll let you comment, but you said, what is Moggy slain for? He said, Moggy is a cat. Interesting. I didn't know that one either. Stelina said, Amy, you penned an intriguing write on the loss of society's fall from grace. Great imagery. I agree. And then Amy said, thank you to everybody. So we are alive and well on the board. And Bobby, Moggy is a cat, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Are you telling me? I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's British slang. A Mogi is a cat.
Mogi. Okay.
Mogi. Yeah. Not doggy. Mogi.
Isn't that what I put on my when I'm like texting somebody? Oh, no, that's an emoji, not a Mogi. Okay.
Not yet. We won't go there. Not down that road.
Yep.
I really enjoyed this piece. It has such. As other commenters have said, it is a powerful piece. It is told from the point of view of the cat, yet not first person narrative, but from the cat's point of view. which I thought was bloody brilliant. Here's a cat looking at her, looking at this blade, and she sits and she's got a very serious look on her face, like, you know, has she done something with it? Is she about to do something with it? Is she about to do something dire with it? Or is she simply lost in thought, as I find myself sometimes, fixing on a single object, and your mind, your eyes are still fixed on the object, but your mind is elsewhere. But she's got the decanter and the glass next to her, and the cat watching, it takes you through thoughts of the cat, which I thought was just inspired, rather than give you the thoughts of the girl. Here's the cat pondering on the thoughts of the girl. And I thought that was an ingenious take on that prompt.
Absolutely. And we have yet another person. Afaziana is on the board. I'm going to start listing off everybody who's not on the board just to save time. I think it's going to be a little bit easier. but thanks for coming on. Is this awkward for me? Because this is the two shows I work on, my two poetry wives together here. Uh-oh, I got to be careful what I say. I'm going to get in trouble. But we have... We have a new poem up. Let's get going here. So we have one by Jenny Hunt and Dex. If you want to read that one, that would be great.
Absolutely. So this is Kids Are the Future, Treasure Them by Jenny Hunt, 2017. Don't speak unless spoken to. How can we learn? Be seen, not heard. That's nearly impossible. Words so cold and harsh, we all know so well. Everyone's feelings are valid, even if we don't agree. This is the calm before the storm, the beauty after the disaster. The future is ours to protect, not ours to waste. It is up to all of us to help future generations, not to destroy the dreams of our young ones. Who are we to decide such a grim future? Guide the young ones and love them is our duty. They are their own self and will make mistakes. We should pave a way for them, not barricades. Let us not push the young ones away, scaring them into insanity. Isn't the way. Take time to embrace your children. Enjoy every moment with them. Show them love. Cherish this time. It doesn't last forever. Show them the future isn't over. Leave them with an empty canvas. Let them create their own future painted with care. Youth fades too fast. Just wait and see. Don't forget to stop and just breathe. Let our future generations thrive. Let them be themselves. Let them shine. End poem.
Thanks, Dex. And yeah, this is a great message. I really like the line, let us not push the young ones away, scaring them into insanity. You know, Well, my son was growing up. I found a couple of times I was literally scaring him by trying to explain things, and I really tried to just take that back and just let him see the fun in life. He can be scared when he's an adult, like the rest of us, right? Let him enjoy his teenagers and childhood. But it's with everything going on in the world, it's really easy to get your kids worried instead of just letting them be kids and enjoy their lives and grow up. Some sort of normality. So very, very, very interesting. Naomi, what did you think?
Yeah, you know, this is an awesome, awesome write filled with, you know, such a great advice. I just love the lines, leave them with an empty canvas, let them create their own future, paint it with care. And then, you know, the last stanza, don't forget to stop and just breathe. Let our future generations thrive. Let them be themselves. Let them shine. Awesome, awesome, write, and that speaks right from the heart. I think I don't know if Jenny is a mother, but, you know, this is really, you know, I could see a mother writing this, you know, for you know, upbringing the children, and just beautifully written all the way through. So bravo, Jenny.
Excellent. Yes, absolutely. She said she was inspired by her being a child psychologist, so that was good. And Robbie gave a good comment earlier. He was saying he used to think kids were like glass, but when became better with myself, more self-confidence that disappeared. And it is true. Kids can take things, and they're smarter than we think, and you know, the elderly are wiser than we think. Kids can be very smart. Dex, you got to read it. You did a great job. What'd you think?
Yeah, I thought that this was a great write and a fantastic write. And, you know, really when you boil it down to it, you know, so much of the world's problems could be solved just by really kind of living and doing, as this poem says, you know, the kids are, you know, neglected kids that are, what is it, kids that are neglected by the village learn to burn it down or grow up to burn it down or whatever the saying is. So just a powerful right.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Bobby, take us home with this comment.
I like Dex's comment. Very powerful. The compassion in this is so... So prevalent. Like I said, I don't know Jenny Hunt either. She looks like, you know, she's new to our contest, which I'm glad to see. She says, her page says, I'm a wife and a mother. I use poetry as a way to release my feelings of any kind. I have a lot of self-doubt I'm working on because I love my family so much. She's... Apparently, there's a lot of compassion in this person, and it came pouring forth for all the children that she referenced. She says I have used a mix of prompts or AI says I like to use a mix of prompts that I had the kids in from 2 to 12. And 35 and 51 to emphasize that our kids are the future, to honor Svetlana and her family's future, which very loving, very I can't help but feel that there's a dearth of people like her around. That when a child falls, instead of saying, "Oh, that's how you learn," you get up again. She runs over and helps them up. And there's so much loving there that I can't help but compliment her on the way she displays it in this piece.
I agree, absolutely. And, you know, everybody be nice to your kids because they got to fix all the messes that we screwed up in our lives. That's every kid's job, right? That'll be our grandkids' job. And just a throwback to the beginning.
And if you don't like them, then you just spend their inheritance.
That's right, exactly. as a throw that back to the beginning, by the way, the piano artist that we had just texted me and said she was very excited. We played her piece tonight, and she actually played a concert and played that exact same piece in concert in Philadelphia tonight.
Oh, nice.
Very excited. Yeah, I'm sure she'll listen to the show later. I usually send it to her, and she listens. But, okay, if you are listening right now, thank you. Let's move on here. And Naomi, if you can read this one, since Ephesiana is on the board, we're gonna read hers next. I think I posted it.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yes. Read for Ephesiana. Oh, I have to do this justice. The vibrancy of the young grass is in an old grove, draws nefarious attention, innocent ivory low to the green, air fresh as the fruit, but the trees have looping shadows. Munin watches the wolf's approach while Huggin gossips in a gurgling croak. All father's eyes no trouble bruise. They note each stray hair and faded bruise. To brave the woods of life alone is a challenge in which the child partakes, while ravens whisper warnings and danger sheds its cloak. End poem.
Awesome. You did it great justice. And Afasiana seems to have a theme, though. She's been writing for a while for the show, and she's been really combining pictures, and I just love the way she actually does it within the poem that she says. And I think that's the librarian in her, because to me, she writes these little books, these little picture books. And she just did a fantastic job, and I love how she kind of mirrored in. She has the picture, for those of you following along, there's a picture of a young girl that's kind of playing, but then there's this wolf in the background that's ominous. And in between, what she was writing for, a picture of these two crows. I just love how she kind of sandwiched those between. So just, you know, beautiful composition all around, Faziana. Awesome job. Dex, let's start with you.
Yeah, I thought that she did a great job, like you said, kind of intertwining and weaving these images together and making this story. But she also did a great job of describing, you know, the image, you know, the vibrancy of the young grass, innocent ivory low to the green, air fresh as the fruit. You know, she's really bringing the image to life with her words. So very well done.
Absolutely, of course. Bobby.
I was liking Faziana's visual imagery. She paints a beautiful word picture, vibrancy of young grass in an old grove draws nefarious attention. What a great way to describe the wolf in the background. Air fresh as the fruit, but the trees have lupine shadows. Again, great reference, great use of vocabulary with the word lupine, being either a flower or, in this case, the wolf. And then she's given names to the crows, which I love. Is just she doesn't simply say two crows; she's personified them. And all father's eyes know trouble bruise. They note each stray hair and faded bruise. I really like what she's done with the assonance in that particular stanza. But she's got in this brevity. She is such a compact story. To brave the woods of life alone is a challenge in which the child partakes, while ravens whisper warnings and danger sheds its cloak. Just superb piece of writing.
Absolutely, and I love that too. I'm not going to pronounce it right, Afasiana, but Munin and Huggin or something like that, or Munin and Huggin is the name that she put to the crows, which is great. That to me shows a wordsmith right there, where those are just beautifully made up names, and they're together, so it's almost like they're brothers or sisters. And I too like the air fresh as the fruit, but the trees have looping shadows. And she kind of interspersed. So the trees don't have the fruit. The air has it, but the wolf has kind of overtaken the trees with its shadows and taken that scent of the fruit, and it's gone from there. I love how she kind of intertwined that. That was beautifully done. Excellent comments. And Faziana's correcting me here, and I didn't make them up there for myths. Oh, okay.
Yeah,
the first one was right there in North mythology.
Yeah, they're the two crows that accompany Vikings when they go to Odin. When they go to the world, when they die, they're the two crows that accompany them. She put in Norse mythology into their poem.
Yeah. I
love Vikings. I'm a Viking freak.
I was trying to give you credit, Faziana, but I am rightfully shamed for
no
not
more
knowing
me
that. So thank
you
guys. I appreciate it. As usual, our board is right on it and gets all the references. So excellent. Well, excellent references put in there then. I love them. They were great. All right, cool. Let's, I was so entrapped and captured by that, I forgot to look forward and get the next one here. So let's go, let me get one here. We're going to do one by Selena. And let me just grab that here. I was getting so into Faziana's poem, I forgot to do my job and get the next one.
Bad host.
And Ben says, I feel like a Faziana is, in a way, an American Valkyrie. I could see that, yes. Her husband is actually a champion archer, so I could see a Faziana
really?
As a Valkyrie, absolutely.
Wow.
He is, yeah.
She actually, Faziana, I sent her the link to Svetlana's work, and she plucked one out of there immediately and wrote a piece to it and sent it to me. And I'm hoping that Faziana takes some more of the artwork and puts it into a contest, because I'd like the opportunity to write to it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure she will. And Faziana says, yes, he was doing a Viking demonstration today at a children's festival. So there you go. So I think Faze is an American Valkyrie. Absolutely. All right, let's move on here. So we have, let me see if I did this right. 1 second. Yeah, Stelina. I posted one by Stelina. And Bobby, you can give that a read. It'd be great.
Okie dokie. I get to channel Stelina.
I think this one's got a SoundCloud.
Oh, it does.
I think it does.
You guys are so smart.
I know we had a couple that did.
Did that one get posted at the last minute?
She says
there was a SoundCloud,
yeah.
I didn't see it on there. I might have not added it. We can move on, I think it got added kind of late. Let me see if I can get it added, and we can move on to a different one for now.
Okay.
I think Stelina might have put it on late. Let me see if I can find it.
When I posted her,
she said yes. She had trust. She said she had trouble posting it. That's
okay.
Let's move on here. Let me get a different one here, and I'll see if I can get it added real quick.
Okay.
One moment. Let's go on to Ben's. So you can read Ben's right here.
Little portraits.
Yeah, I'm posting it right now, and there we go.
Okay, we have little portraits. By Ben Hart. And he's done something similar. He's looks like he's picked out. We have one, two, three, four, five, six, and each little stanza, or should say little poem, is based on a different prompt. So the first one being 8, 21, and 34. And we have Lita and the Swan. The sweetest fruit of spring, the most hated thing, in a garden of goddesses and nymphs, sat in Hades whispering cypress shade. The poor girl could never translate the looks they all gave her. Nine muses danced with skinned knees to bells hung from olive branches, singing with the breeze, and everyone loved seeing Leda so lonely, everyone but the Hecate Three. The maiden asked, are you all right? The crone asked, do you know when you will die? And the mother in between the others kept a firm eye on the sky. It's not safe for you, my dear, here in this garden of sightly serpents. But if you leave now to the Hylet land of shield and spear, you will rest safely in their service. Upon Leda leaving, Hecate watched the swan on the pond and couldn't tell who it was, that upon blinking, she was ungrieving until she saw it had too gone. Poor child. Stand up, soldier. This is not where we fall. Yea, we may have to crawl, but that's nothing we're not used to. It's not worth it if it doesn't bruise you. Every day we dare draw breath is one oblivion we'll never get back. Stand up, soldier. Shine your split starburst eyes. Stand up, soldier. This is where we rise. Three has no title. Interesting. Three. In a world that couldn't forgive our contradictions, it may strike you as silly. Call it a storier's need for disjunction, but when I'm feeling the opposite, I start smoking Luckies. This is the story of me, a blue Americana, poor reimagination of a European classic tragedy, putting a smile on killing yourself with a splash of homosexuality. Only Robin ever got it right. Maybe I've spent all my happiness already somewhere between home and where we ran out of love. Now I'm lucky if the day doesn't kill me, commanding every moment to heal me, but it's not healing fast enough. Four. Bubbles. One. I like to find where fortune so desperately hides from the hammermen of Claret London. Five. Bubbles, two. She's pulling castles down. Castles Papa so beautifully built for her to pull down. And just to watch the ivy climb, he'll build it back up again. And he'll build it back up again just to watch the ivy climb. Scale the towers, he pointed right at heaven. So you'll never be too far from home. Six, Rosie, your signature lipstick kiss on Mark 65 casing his cheek was the last violent mercy many Axis men ever wreaked. Rosie, the boys aren't the only ones with blood on their hands. You were the womb of war that gave them the guns. Rosie, fuck strawberries and Thanksgivings. Fuck being some Heliot homemaker. You are earth shaker. You are death hand in hand with living. End poem.
Excellent, excellent job. And I will say, it was a poem that I wrote for, I think, Pam and Naomi's show the other day that I was having trouble trying to figure out how to separate everything. And Ben actually inspired me with the way he does this. He's like a master of this epic poems that he puts in the parts. So that's what I did. I kind of put it in separate parts, and it worked. That's the thing it needed. So great job, Ben, and awesome read, Bobby. Thank you very much. And yeah, so Naomi, let's start with you.
I first of all, you know, I loved how we separated this into different, you know, little poems. And, you know, I think, you know, while the first one has this really mythical quality to it, you know, the others are really, you know, you really feel the difference. With the others, they're so straightforward. They're today, they're now. And, you know, right down, I think it gets more and more as you go down. And with the last one, you're just right there with lipstick and everything and guns and war and in the reality of today. But very well done indeed, each poem. What a wonderful way to write the different prompts, you know, by separating it into different poems like this. So, I'll be doing this in the future. Awesome, awesome, awesome writes. And I just loved, you know, the one, which one did I really like? The third one, you know, that one I really, really liked. But, you know, they're all really amazing. So great job, Ben Hart. Sorry.
Thanks, Naomi. And let's go to you, Dex.
Yeah, I thought it was a great write. It almost felt like kind of like a sketch show, you know, where you just kind of, you know, they do a different scene on stage and kind of clean up and move on. And, you know, it just felt like almost you were watching a play. But I like stanza three, too. I start, well, when I'm feeling the opposite, I start to smoke Luckies. There's just a few clever lines in that, in this stanza. Only Robin ever got it right. My interpretation of that was Robin Williams, but I thought that this was a great write.
Yeah, I couldn't figure that out. I thought he meant like Batman and Robin, just because of, I remember the old Batman and Robin. Robin would a lot of times figure out the little clues. You know, what does the Riddler mean? And then Robin would kind of jump on it. So that's the one I got, but. Different Robins there. Excellent. Thanks. Thanks, Duke. Bobby, you got to read it. It was nice, epic. You did a great job.
Thank you. Thank you. I was studying the prompts here, and I was taken by the last one. Very strong. Very, I thought, very imaginative, because I when I posted prompt 15, it did have a World War II flavor. To it, it has young lady sitting in what looks like a slip with curlers or with a I don't know, I can only think of the Jewish term, the shmata. She's got a kerchief around her hair, which is what they used to wear in the factories during World War II to protect their hair, the women in the factories. Oh, she's got pictures of she's got a picture of Gina Lollobrigida in the background and another movie star. It looks like Sophia Loren and Stalin on the other side. And what he has done with this particular, I like the way he says little portraits, because he's written an anthology here of based on the different prompts, and the last one, which unless you're a real student of World War II, I think will fall a little short. Rosie, your signature lipstick
yep.
kiss. On Mark 65, casing cheeks, was the last violent mercy many Axis men. There was, during World War II, each of the enemy countries had, in some cases, men, mostly women. The British had Lord Haw Haw. Who would do a British accent? They were designed to broadcast, radio broadcast, demoralizing news and propaganda to the Allied countries. And in this case, you had Tokyo Rose, and in the Pacific and in the European theater, you had Axis Rose. And I think this is really interesting, the way he has the way he's encapsulated in a brevity.
Not to interrupt, Bobby, but Ben just said he wrote that especially for you. That part.
Did he really? Wow.
And he just said that. He said, I wrote that for you. Yeah, I wrote that for you, Captain.
Oh my gosh! I'm honored. I really do appreciate. The historical references in this. The boys aren't the only ones with blood on their hands. And it's true, because actually what they did with Tokyo Rose and Axis Rose is they brought them to trial after the war as being collaborators. And they did, while they weren't guilty of war crimes, they were guilty of aiding and abetting the enemy. So this is interesting. Fuck strawberries and Thanksgivings. You are the earth shaker. You're the death hand in hand with the living, which is true. I mean, they and very often they would broadcast. They would broadcast ship sinkings in the Pacific, the Atlantic. Axis rose before the Allied even knew. And what a lot of people don't realize, and I will stop myself right here after I say this, because I could go on and on, but the Brits almost lost the war in the Atlantic because the Wolfpack were so the Wolfpack it's a strategy of the German submarines were so effective that they were losing ships left and right, and not just warships, but supply ships.
Yep.
And it hadn't been for the HMS Bulldog capturing the U-110 and being able to, the very, very courageous skipper, being able to go onto a booby-trapped submarine and take off the Enigma machine and all the key codes for the next 30 days. Alan Turing's work at Bletchley, the Allies would have lost the war. And these are just things I find absolutely fascinating that, there but for the grace of God. And that was one of the first conversations I had with my late partner as we were courting one another, and he loved nautical history, and he said it wasn't the U-110, it was U-101, and it was, I said, bet me.
Yeah. My father was actually, he was in World War II in the Pacific, so I remember all those stories as well too. But all right, cool. Let's move on. We got a lot of people that are asking for trying to get their poems on, I know, before the end of the night. We have basically everybody here. We had who else joined? Somebody else joined. I can't even keep track anymore. There's so many people. Jeremy joined. So I put Naomi's up because I know she's got to take off very soon. So Naomi, if you want to give that a read, that'd be great.
Oh, thank you so much. I have these meds I have to take now, so supposed to take them at 9, but I've been holding off because I wanted to really phone in. So this is called Hope. The damp night tucked under a woolen dove gray sky carried that biting cold, the kind that only stops on the porches of sturdy, thick-walled houses. But as I stood in the mud, murky water bubbling over my boots, gurgling as I walked, I knew this would be no glossy magazine mansion photograph, as from behind a rain-splattered window of a tiny wooden cabin tumbling beneath rust and rotten planks, I saw her brittle frame like a ghost in a land of torn paper dolls. Her eyes staring out at me, their dank, cloudy color of wet ash chilling my bones, as a door left wide open to an icy wind, slamming only to fly open again. But she sat there so still, petting her pup, her little cold-nosed furry friend with deep brown eyes and fluffy, floppy ears, gifting her with a hope she had never known. And as the storm swirled around her, she waved and smiled, her glowing face blowing raspberries to the world. I'm still here. I'm still here. I'm still here, hugging the whimpering mutt to her chest. And in that instant, I heard the song of the rain, the drums that are the windows, cymbals that are tin roofs, the soft, soft maracas that are the music of the grass. and humming I waited for dawn, the cheery chattering of the birds and poem.
Amazing, Naomi. Thank you so much. That was unbelievably beautiful. And there's something, you know, this picture obviously with the human that's caged, but then the animal. There's something so fragile about animals, especially dogs. Domesticated dogs are so domesticated at this point. They rely on us like little children their whole lives. You know, there's something so fragile about them. So absolutely beautiful. Dax, let's get your thoughts. Let's start with you.
Yeah, I thought that you you nailed this, and you really did a great job at pulling at the, you know, the apron strings, the emotions, and just you know, as the storm swirled around her, she waved and smiled, her glowing face, blowing raspberries to the world. Great use of imagery in there, and really gives us this. Just kind of epic moment, or just an epic tale, epic moment about that that matched this photo. So very well done, Naomi.
Thank you, Dex.
Thanks, Dex. And before we get to Bobby, anything that you wanted to say about your poem, Naomi?
No. Well, thank you for the inspiration. Wow. It was real. I was really inspired by that picture. Oh my gracious!
That's all, Bobby. She makes she does all the contests. I'm just the eye candy of the show. You know, which shows you how ugly I am. I'm eye candy for a radio show. So there you go. Bobby, go for it. What are your thoughts on this?
You're my Vanna White.
That's right. Exactly.
When I posted this one, I knew that it was going to gather a bit of attention. It just has that potential for storytelling with the emotion that's shown through in it. I mean, and you have to appreciate the artistry of the photographer to see her subjects in this way, and then to take this very evocative photograph and to write an equally evocative poem. I'm not even going to pick out any particular lines from your piece because it flows so smoothly with its storytelling and with its visual imagery. And I mean, you evoke chill winds and cold and wetness, and you can feel this poem as you're reading it, as you've read it, and the emotion, the strength of the emotion in it. It's got to be one of the best things you've written.
Thank you, Bobby.
I agree. It was heartbreaking. It was such a beautiful
way. I hope you feel that
way
about it, too, because it's deeply emotional. I think it's an absolutely inspired interpretation of the prompt.
Yeah, I really loved writing it. I took all day. days.
That's a lot.
I edited the hell out of it.
Well, you can tell how much care you put into it. And both Miriam and Amy said, I saw her brittle frame like a ghost in a land of torn paper dolls. That was her favorite line, and I agree. That's an absolutely amazing line. That's a line that you could have, you know, a whole contest on. So beautiful, beautiful job. Naomi, we appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, cool. All right, we're going to move on here.
I'm going to try to stay for Dex's poem because he's online there. But
yep, and that's who we are doing next. No problem.
Okay.
If you got to drop, you got to drop. But we're going to do Dex right now. So we're getting there, guys. We are rocking on the board tonight. Everyone's here, so we're trying to get to everybody's as best we can. You know, we don't want to shortchange any of the comments, and but I'm loving this party. This is our new record, Bobby. This is our new bar that we're set at here with this many people on the board.
We're rolling like a steam engine here. We got a head of steam.
I'm gonna have to start advertising with planes and billboards and stuff to get more people on here. But anyway, Deb, we have yours up. We're excited about. If you want to give it a read, that would be great.
Let's call it The Hand That Was Dealt. If only I had good news, the authority to grant relief, sing music to your mind, offer a promise in every word. Your life's still so fresh, your chores get completed, on tippy toes shaking, reaching outstretched arms. We walk through life's hailstorm, holding buckets so heavy, tending soil rich with struggle. Reason and meaning then sprout. Gazing with pleading eyes, scanning for any warmth at all in this cold world, any shape, any form. If my backpack was magic and it possessed a superpower, then let me carry your pain. I'd stuff it full and let you run free. I'd send you positive vibes, but you don't see that as a prize. You find comfort in truth that will be revealed in time. And your many days ahead, I can only pray that you find the ability to discover peace in how high that you've climbed. End poem.
Awesome read. This is another beautiful write.
Oh, wow.
You know, what to say about it, Tex?
No, I just thought it was almost getting too depressing, but I just felt like this girl and they're just, you couldn't lie to her and just give her a fairy tale. So very well.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It was really, really, really beautiful. I love that. If my backpack was magic, just a superpower, let me carry your pain, but then I'd stuff it full and let you run free. It's just so beautiful. Naomi, I know you're going to drop soon. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, this is absolutely, so heartbreaking and so tender, Dex, just the way you're taking this girl or this, what, I didn't look at the prompt, but this, it seems to be a child under your wing here and just wanting to guide them and enlighten their journey, their pain almost. And giving them the ability for hope, for a better future, to climb into adulthood. I say it like that, but you wrote it so gracefully on the page. This is so beautiful. We walk through life's hailstorm, holding buckets so heavy, tending soil rich with struggle, reason and meaning. Then sprout, and of course the stanza that you just recited, Daniel, which was absolutely beautiful. But this was so beautifully written all the way through. Bravo, bravo, Dex, wonderful.
Thank you, ma'am.
Excuse me, absolutely, Captain. My captain, go for it.
This is a departure for you, Dex, and I think it's a remarkable one. You usually a very wry acerbic, which I you do it you do it with panache. I like your style. I always have. You have a way of winnowing the grain of truth out of the chaff. But this is with such compassion and such it's difficult for me to describe it. You've looked at this. When I posted this picture, I looked at it and I thought, here is a young child in almost in widow's weeds, in the veil of mourning, you know, there's still the cherubic cheeks and the chubby fingers, but she's got this black veil and this black gown. And I thought to myself, I wonder what's going to come out of this particular picture. And what you've offered is the view of what sometimes children have to deal with, and it's beyond their comprehension, it's beyond their ken. And here you are offering the hand of solace and of compassion, and let me help you get through this, because if you can weather this, you can weather anything. This is truly, I think this has got to be one of the best damn things you've ever written, Dex. Seriously.
Thank you, Bobby. Nailed it.
Yeah, and Ephesiana said, great to hear your poems again. So definitely made a mark on everyone here. All right, cool.
Absolutely.
We had, our awesome behind-the-scenes people are ship workers that are filling up the steam engines to our Titanic of a show here. Worked really hard and got a couple of I don't know where I came up with that reference for, but got a couple of these SoundClouds on last minute for us. So let's see if we can definitely get to them. So we actually do have Stelina's SoundCloud here, and I'm putting the poem up. If we can get that one paid, that would be great. And good night, Naomi and Miriam. We appreciate you being on the board, but let's go ahead and try to play Stelina.
Oh, freedom. Oh, freedom. Oh, freedom over me and before I'll be a slave, I'll be buried in my grave and go home to my Lord and be free.
Her eyes speak of hope long now faded, desolation etched upon furrowed brow, emotions reflected in her lone companion's gaze, both searching for answers through the shaded window. She cannot return to the days of servitude, to be in master's possession, silently bearing her plight, toil breaking her slender back each day, his insatiable lust breaking her spirit each night. Tears fall for her love, lying cold neath the earth, along with two babies born without a chance. Fortune has smiled upon her lot in life, never to be free in the sunshine to dance. In the distance, she hears the sound of oppression, the thought of their revelry picking up their pace, sharpened fangs drooling to tear her tender flesh, gaining momentum, incited by the thrill of the chase. To he who breathed essence into her soul, she solemnly whispers a pleading prayer to welcome her into his merciful embrace before the scent of fear calls the baying hounds there.
Awesome SoundCloud, that was amazing. And what's some great, soulful, and just really beautiful, heartfelt poems we've had these last bunch of ones that have come on. You know, I've always said, besides, you know, things like the Holocaust and things like this, the the slavery and oppression that happened in this country is one of those things we we can never forget. It's something we always have to go back and relive, and it's just because we don't repeat it, right? This is something that has to be part of our history so that we can learn from it and just never have things like that happen again. And you know, this is just said in such a beautiful way and read so beautifully. Sharpened fangs drooling to tear her tender flesh, and every line in here is just you know, gut wrenching and beautiful at the same time. So thank you, Dex. Let's start with you.
Yeah, I thought that this was an incredible write. Great SoundCloud, the way that she kind of used an accent and kind of spun some of the language that she used throughout. You know, if you're going to touch on the subject of slavery, you know, for far too long it was just kind of, you know, obviously it wasn't it needs. There's uncomfortable lines in here, you know, his insatiable lust breaking her spirit each night. There's some very uncomfortable parts and some very ugly parts, but that's the reality of it. It's what needs to be portrayed if you're going to tackle this subject. So very well done, Selena.
I agree. Yeah, you can't sugarcoat it. This is what happened, and let's never have this happen again you know, on our watch, that's for sure. Awesome. Thank you, Dex. And Bobby.
This was a very powerful write, very visceral, very raw, very artfully done, because with something so raw and real, sometimes there's an opportunity, there's a chance of underdoing it or overdoing it, and the balance in this was very artful, was very very to the point. I'm not even going to pick, again, this is one of those pieces, I'm not going to pick out a single line because it is a contiguous story from start to finish, beautifully done. And we got two absolutely amazing, kick-ass, unbelievable, gobsmacking poems out of that one prompt. Just both of them dissimilar, but it's still all powerful. And Stelena, this has got to be one hell of a write. Words fail me. It's tremendous.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I was just rewatching The Color Purple by Steven Spielberg. And if you've never seen it, it's not really about slavery, but it's about oppression. If any of you have never seen it, you should definitely watch it. It's an amazing, just a powerful movie. If you don't cry at the end of it, I'm not sure. But this is what reminded me of, even though, again, that movie's not about slavery. All right, cool. Let's go on. We definitely have time for one more, and if we end on this one, we are ending on a bang, I'm sure. So one more SoundCloud that our behind-the-scenes team so graciously threw on late. This one is by Poetic Picasso. If we can get that on, that would be fantastic.
Hast thou not seen the unkindness of ravens looming over the drear and dark tower of London? They said that if the six resident ravens depart, the tower and lofty kingdom would collapse. Wretched be the foe that the curse befalleth upon, for so ominous is the unfortunate fate of doom. The gurgling, croaking, harsh, grating sounds echoing throughout the hollow walls with a shrill. Know that they are faithful and observing watchers, harbingers of the clear tidings of death and despair. Their allegiance is only to the master they serve. behold the lost souls of the clamour of injustices, those poor devils, the victims of the king's wrath, whose hearts were plucked out like torn petals. The thorns of vengeance cry out with a full force, and sharp shall be the dagger that pierces the king. The heavy manacles of oppression shall be lifted, with the just fall before a dirge of the caged and slain, and the souls of air shall rise from their tombs to rule the tower with the righteous ones of time. Herefore thou shalt know about his abrupt downfall, and the tower shall be stained in thick royal blood. Hark! I hear them now from my solitary prison. Forever I roam the tower as the ghastly reverend. In the boom.
Oh, Frank, you got me. I was waiting for the laugh. I didn't expect the scream. So awesome. That was amazing. That was beautiful. I just love the beginning. Hast thou not seen the unkindness of Raymond looming over the drear and dark tower of London? Just the beginning was just beautiful. I remember I was a long time ago, in the early 90s, I was at the Tower of London, and I have a picture of my wife sitting with a raven sitting kind of right next to her. And it was a weird experience. I don't know why. I just had this weird feeling with the sitting next to that raven. But awesome, awesome. So such an amazing read, and I love that. I always love it when he does these kind of stories. You just feel this presence in this tower, kind of thinking these thoughts. So amazing. Dex, let's go to you. Let's start with you.
Okay. So, this was a great SoundCloud frame. I'm torn on the perspective of this one, and don't take it as the wrong, because I thought it was fantastic. I think it would be great either way. I feel as though it's almost like, from the perspective of the ravens that are sitting there watching, and they're on the king's castle, and you know, you'd think that these ravens are kind of looking after things or whatever it is, but they just stand there and watch as the oppressors are slaughtered, and they just kind of move on. Now, I also kind of interpreted this also too, thinking about this, is this a man in solitary confinement and he's dreaming this as like some get back that's maybe never going to happen towards the king and the people that have locked him up. So I thought it was a great write. I thought it maybe could have gone either way, and I thought it was a great SoundCloud.
Yeah, I agree. When I was thinking about it too, I was thinking like, you know, is it a person sitting up there? I wasn't thinking of the raven. I think that's really interesting, Dex. I was thinking almost like a spirit up there, kind of walking around and thinking and watching everything happening. So, really interesting. But the description, you're just great. Cool. All right, Bobby. We have plenty of time here. I think. I don't think we have enough time for another one. So I think if you give a comment on this, I think
How many do we have left?
A bunch. Let's see. We have four. We have four left.
We're going to have another one because Betty Page reserved a spot. So we'll be getting another piece from her, which we'll be reading next time. So okay. So
yes, if you want to if you want to do that and then talk about the next one. Yeah, Anna Kaluta, Scott Sharp,
the upcoming contest.
That'd be great.
Which I think, yeah. I really like this, Frank. I like the fact that on the same prompt, two different pieces have touched on two different bits of mythology, and in this one, tradition also with the ravens and the Tower of London. I felt at one point channeling Poe again, which you seem to do with amazing agility. But I like the storytelling in this, and I agree with Dex that it is almost also from. It's almost like it changes, shifts focus from the ravens to someone incarcerated in the tower, and perhaps having a flight of fantasy, or from the pain or the solitude of the incarceration. But I really, really like the storytelling. I like the just the visual imagery, wonderful, wonderful storytelling, wonderful visual imagery, and a great sound cloud, as always. So, and I really appreciate that you wrote for this, so thank you for that. Enjoyed it, hearing it. Okay, and we're coming up on 4 minutes before the end of the show. And I was having a little bit of a challenge trying to clip the art for this next for the next contest, because the artist was clever enough to to put the little cautionary, and he put it this way: he protected his art, and I was having a terrible time trying to clip it, but I finally found a way around it today. And so for you folks who've been around for a while and had in your heyday in the 70s. When you were young adults, and I say in your, into your 20s and teens, you're going to recognize, I think, this artist. You're going to say, wait a minute, I remember seeing this art. It is the art of John Petrie. And matter of fact, I had, that's what brought me to it, as I had two of his posters on the walls of the, they graced the walls of the very first apartment I ever had. Which was $156 a month, and it was furnished with plastic furniture, but it had John Petrie's artwork up there, and he was very, very dystopian, very fantasy oriented, but beautiful, beautiful artwork. And I thought, considering the beauty of Svetlana's work, I wanted to follow on with something equally as rich, but very, very period. You'll see it is very dystopian, very, very out of the 70s. It has, the artwork has titles, which I'm grateful for. So you'll have titles out there to work with, and it just some amazing imagery. And I think you folks will have, I hope, you'll have a lot of fun with what I'm going to try and put it together tomorrow and get it out there as soon as I can, because I want to give you plenty of time to pore over this. This guy is a tremendous, tremendous artist, and still generating work. So he's an American artist. So John Petrie, you will see him in the next day or so as soon as I get it out there, and I hope you enjoy. I hope you enjoy the artwork as much as I had trying to find it, because like I said, he's got it all out on his website, which I will furnish with resources. But my God, trying to clip it off of there, he didn't make it easy. So God bless him. Anyway, he's protecting his artwork, and I don't blame him one solitary bit. Anyway, folks, thank you so much for everyone. Was out on the board. Oh my God, we had bleachers. We had bleacher full of people today, to this evening. I just wish you could have joined us for the salsa and chips that we had in the real world.
I know we were so popular tonight. I was like, why couldn't I be this popular in high school? All of a sudden, now we're popular. What's happening here?
Yeah, I find very gratifying. I'm very, very appreciative. Of our audience, whether they're in the cheap seats eating their own chips or down here with us eating ours. Dan, as always, thank you very much for directing traffic. And Naomi.
Bobby, you're my favorite ever.
And Dex for joining us really appreciate having having another couple to play off of. So with that, I thank you all, and may this be the toughest thing you've got to do Sunday. Everybody sleep in, have nice coffee and some homemade brioche, and be good to the people you love.
Good night, Bobby. Good night, everybody.
Ciao.